Thanks to more than 1,000 listeners who made this one of our most successful mini-thons ever. We saw old friends and new giving to WMNF, raising more than $115,000 in just a few days. Please send back your paperwork if you pledge to pay by check or join the circle of friends. It's never too late to give to WMNF. Call 813-238-8001 or give online at WMNF.org. WMNF has the best listeners in the world. Indeed, more on that specific to talking animals in a moment or two. Right now, I am Duncan Strauss, really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be discussing an inventive new program that pairs those who can't afford spay-neuter for their animal with those inclined to pay for the procedure. The co-founder of the organization that launched this program, our guest Stephanie Downs. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Mike Doty with Year of the Dog here on Talking Animals. Good morning.
Time tells butterfat lies, sweet lousy cupcakes of lies. I'll comply and I shall play along. I was born in the year of the dog. Bend the blue black tattoo and crawled on my arm, scribbled vines crawling my arm up. Then the rooster rose up and it cried an alarm, sounded alarming alarms. And laid on the lawn in the dawn till the morning got warm. Queer fear and severe clear, scrunch your fat face like a doll. I got made in the candy floss smog. I was born in the year of the dog. Benetrove and my car o'er the hills down the shore, over and down to the shore. Ben, I threw out my dreams, so I dream them no more. Drown them and dream them no more. Then I sat and I stared at the waves of my primer grade four. And I'm listless and lost and I cry all the time. Lost and I cry all the time. Then I felt just the same, though I chuffed up a line. Ah, but I felt just the same. And the steam from my cup of girl love and it spelled out a name.
That was Mike Doty with Year of the Dog, an animal song of sorts, to ease us into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Stephanie Downs, co-founder and president of Fix-It Foundation, a relatively new organization that aspires to help address pet overpopulation through inventive programs. We'll find out about Fix-It Foundation and one of those programs in particular, Get Your Fix, in a few moments here. We'll speak with Stephanie Downs in a few moments on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also a bit later in the show, we'll step into the Comedy Corner, which involves animal comedy. Play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a gift card from Loving Hut, the local vegan restaurant. And I'd originally hoped to also speak with Kitty Jones, a high school student in the state of Washington who was working on a ballot measure there, yes, on 1130, that would prevent extreme confinement of egg-laying hens. She personally got 10,000 ballot signatures, which I'm told is more than any volunteer has collected in any ballot measure in the history of animal welfare. But even though I spoke to Kitty in person about this Sunday, I didn't hear back from her about this interview, so not today, it looks like, but perhaps on a future edition of Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for animal news and announcements. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, our first item involves saying thank you. As we just mentioned at the top of the show, we just a few days ago completed our summer fun drive, and went very, very well, and want to just between all kinds of things, people donating to the Talking Animals tip jar in advance, making some early pledges. Someone got a paver here at the station and acknowledged Talking Animals with that donation. So anyways, lots of wonderful pledges and donations of all stages during the show itself last Wednesday at this time. And anyways, just fantastic. Of course, that helped offset the $62,000 that was slashed from WNF's fiscal year budget when our illustrious governor vetoed funding for all public broadcasting in Florida. So we really appreciate the support of WNF that you gave, and I personally appreciate the support of Talking Animals that many of you offered. And again, this is sort of only about 7-plus months into WNF having expanded Talking Animals to an hour weekly. So we all the more want to just keep doing well with that and keep underscoring that vote of confidence. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, on to some the animal news items directly, including one that came to me from Sean Canan, our Assistant News and Public Affairs Director, and I think it came to him via HART, Tampa's bus line, but involves Cacao, the bus-riding dog of Milan. Cacao, a 16-year-old mixed-breed dog from Milan, Italy, has become somewhat of a celebrity after he appeared in local papers for his weird habit of taking the bus to his favorite spot in the city. A true Milanese, that Cacao knows the city by heart, some would say even better than some of his fellow human inhabitants, and his weekend antics are clear proof. Almost every day, for the last few years, Cacao leaves his master's home and heads for the bus stop on Aragon Boulevard. There he sits on his backside along the other human commuters, waiting for bus 54. As it approaches the station, he prickles his ears and takes a good look at who's sitting in the driver's seat. You see, this four-legged rascal only takes the bus when it's driven by the driver he's known since he first started his secret trips. After he makes sure he's got the right driver, Cacao leaps on the bus and waits quietly until he reaches his destination, Lombrate Station in northeastern Milan. I think he has a certain reason for taking the bus there, but Cacao just loiters in the public garden for a few hours, then when he's tired, takes the bus home. Luckily, his old friend, the bus driver, always ignores regulations at his own risk and allows him to ride on the bus. Now, extending our theme of animals regularly taking other forms of transportation to get around, comes a story from the New York Daily News. Starts off, bird brain might not be such an insult after all. A feral pigeon nicknamed Tony has been riding the New York Waterway Ferry from Manhattan to Weehawken at the same time for 3 years. Quote, I've been working this job for 23 years and I've never seen anything like this, says senior deckhand George Shump, a 52-year-old from the Upper East Side. 3 years ago, this pigeon shows up and starts going through the cabin eating crumbs. Next thing you know, he's here every day at the exact same time and he does more work cleaning than my partner. According to deckhands and regular passengers, Tony boards the Thomas Jefferson Ferry every morning at Pier 79 on West 39th Street during the rush hour commute. He travels back and forth on the boat to New Jersey, exiting briefly at each dock to search for food before disembarking after 2 hours without fail back in Manhattan. I love stories like that. All right, locally here, announcement of upcoming events. Our friends at the Animal Coalition of Tampa gearing up for the annual Spaghetti and No Balls Benefit Dinner. And that's going to take place Saturday, August 6th at the Arthur Murray Dance Studio, 3217 South MacDill Avenue in Tampa. The event will feature dinner from Louis Pappas Restaurant, Cash Bar, Silent Auction, Door Prize Drawing, and Entertainment, provided by Arthur Murray Dance Studio. All funds raised go directly to the ACT Spay-Neuter Clinic's mission to end pet overpopulation in our community, which, of course, hooks into the conversation we'll have with our guests momentarily. And donations help keep ACT's costs affordable for everyone in need of services. So for information about the costs and other details, go to actampa.org. And I think we'll come back to some news items a bit later in the show. But right now, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Sean Cullen with a piece called Cats on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love animals. Not you. I love cats. Cats were first domesticated in China in 712 A.D. And they were used to drive carriages. There were 600 cats all lined up in a long line pulling one very large carriage. Oh, and they would meow. And they'd whip them. Meow! 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 On Felix. Meow! Oh, yes. Go, Morris. Meow! And eventually that led to the cat rebellion of 815. Well, the cats rose up, shaved themselves, put on little derbies, chased people around the village squares for 3 days until finally they got tired and they grew their hair back. Just hung around in barns eating mice. Well, that's neither here nor there. Well, I love cats, and my favorite... I have two cats, and they're called Trouble and Danger. And they're little white, identical cat boys. And we used to have hamsters called Arts and Entertainment. But one day, Trouble and Danger got at Arts and Entertainment. Now we just have Entertainment with no real integrity. And it's all, you know, it's sad. But my two cats, and this probably all cats do this, but I always found it really quite strange. When you're there and they have a litter box where they throw their candy wrappers and cigarette butts. No. You have your litter box and you scoop out the horror and filth with the scoop. You put it in a plastic bag and give it to someone. We exchange it all around my building. But, you know, and it's all fresh and clean, and you put in fresh litter, it's all beautiful and pristine. Both cats leap in, squat down, and drill a stream of urine violently into the... And then walk out. Get a load of that little nugget. It's really strange. But I imagine what they're doing is just claiming their territory, you know? They're claiming their little place. And it'd be great if in life you could do that. You know, like some friend comes over with a car and says, "Hey, look, I just bought this new car. Oh, it's nice. It's mine now!"
All right, that was Sean Cullen with a piece called Cats, taken from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals, our website. Is TalkingAnimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Stephanie Downs. As I mentioned earlier, Stephanie is the co-founder and president of Fix-It Foundation, a relatively new organization that seeks to address pet overpopulation through research projects and inventive programs. We'll focus today on one of those programs, Get Your Fix, that aims to help folks who can't afford to have their pets spayed or neutered by connecting them with folks interested in underwriting the cost of those procedures for that person. It's a nifty idea that we can only hope and imagine will increase the number of animals spayed and neutered. So, with the reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, let's welcome Stephanie Downs to Talking Animals. Stephanie, hello.
Hello, Duncan.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Happy to be here.
Great. So I want to delve into Get Your Fix and perhaps first maybe touch on Fix-It Foundation. But before we get into any of that, I think it'd be really helpful to find out a little bit about you. Maybe you could outline your background, both generally and more specifically your path into working on behalf of animal welfare and animals.
Sure. Well, my professional career, I've been in marketing for about 18 years now, which has lended itself well to working on this project. And I started working in shelters about 12 years ago. And that's where some of the ideas that were of the programs we're doing at Fix It came from, just seeing boxes of puppies and kittens coming in and thinking to myself, we have to figure out a more creative way to get to the source. And so we started Fix It in 2009. And I've also done corporate negotiation work for PETA and lots of volunteer work for various animal organizations over the years.
Wow. All right. So you're well suited for all this. That's great. So what were the initial ideas sort of behind, creating the Fix It Foundation? I mean, was there a certain, catalyst of some kind, or was it just sort of a number of conversations, fueled by your collective, I guess, background, you and your co-founder there, and desire to just sort of help tackle the problem of pet overpopulation? I mean, how did it really, what was really kind of got it going?
Sure. It was, I would say, a compilation of various conversations and really just a lot of thinking and analyzing over the years. As I mentioned, I would see the problem. I would see all these boxes of puppies and kittens coming in, but then I would hear people talking to people at the counter at the shelters, and they'd ask about spay and neuter, and they'd say, well, you have to, here's this thing, you got to call here, and then you got to go there and pick up a voucher, and then you got to call this, you know, these three different clinics and see who can fit you in. And I just thought to myself, you know, why don't we just rush them in the back and say, yep, we'll do it right now. So I wanted to start looking more creatively at spay and neuter, and, you know, I analyzed that starting in about the mid-90s, we really started plateauing on the number of animals that we're killing in our shelters currently, or we're having to put down, I should say. I think shelters do wonderful work. So I want to start looking at some of those ways. So we also have another project we're doing where we're doing, in a controlled environment, an analysis on how to get to people who've previously not wanted to spay and neuter their animals, utilizing creative marketing techniques. So we have a couple things going on, but it was a compilation of many years of different conversations.
Yeah, well, I want to, if we have time, I want to come back to that project you just alluded to.
Great.
And also maybe you could just, because I think it might also be helpful for some context here, just maybe get more specifically into the numbers of what has happened. And then when you describe that plateau,
sure,
of numbers, I think that would also be helpful as we get further into get your fix.
Happy to. And this was something, you know, when I saw the problem happening, I didn't know myself. And so I started delving in and doing some research. And what I learned was that low-cost spay-neuter was introduced in the early 70s, and at that time, we were having to put down approximately 25 million animals in our shelters every year, but because of the introduction of low-cost, they were able to get that number down to approximately 5 million by the mid-90s. So even though 5 million is still a horrible number, I mean, you know, kudos to them and the programs that were able to get it down to that number. But we did plateau in the mid-90s, so again, about 15 years, and as a marketing person, outside of my work with Fix It, I own a marketing firm that I started about 12 years ago. And, you know, so I always look at problems like that like it's a marketing problem, because I believe everybody has their tipping point, right? Everybody has their,
sure,
negotiation point. Even the guys who say, I'd never do it, it's cruel, have their tipping point. And one quick story that will, I think your listeners will enjoy was, as part of that, when I started looking into this industry and trying to figure out how can we find that tipping point, I was having a conversation with a gentleman, and he was just very opposed to it. He was saying, I would never do it, it's cruel. And kind of just jokingly, I offhand said to him, well, what if it was free and I gave you a case of beer, $20? And he looked at me and was like, yeah, I'd do it.
So, now we're talking.
Right, right. So I thought, this is a marketing problem. You know, maybe we're not talking the right language. Maybe we're not using the right incentives. Maybe we're not making it easy enough for people. You know, there's various different possible obstacles, and I wanted to start looking at ways to break those barriers down.
All right, maybe there's just not enough beer involved,
right,
typically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need a beer sponsor.
There you go. So this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Stephanie Downs, co-founder and president of the Fix It Foundation, and talking about a specific program of theirs called Get Your Fix. If you'd like to join the conversation, offer a comment, or ask Stephanie a question, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so let's really get get into discussing Get Your Fix. I mean, how does it work? Let's say I ended up with an animal I didn't expect. Maybe the family next door had to move out and left their, for whatever reason, left their cute puppy behind. Things are, you know, people are going through a lot of foreclosures, difficult times, etc. So I know this puppy needs to be spayed, but let's say I can't afford the cost of the procedure. What, you know, walk us through what happens next in the Get Your Fix world with that scenario.
Absolutely. And, the scenario just built is extremely typical for the people that we see coming onto the site.
Sure.
So how it works is, Get Your Fix was created to connect pet owners in need with donors who want to have a direct impact on helping animals. So on the site, pet owners post a profile. That means, where they post a picture, they say where they live, not their address, but the town that they live in,
mm-hmm.
and they tell their story. And almost all are good Samaritans who have taken in a stray, found a box of puppies or kittens, rescued an animal from an abusive situation. We see that a lot. Or they open their home to an animal, like the example you'd given, that was probably going to be dumped at the shelter.
Yeah.
And they just want to do the right thing, but they themselves are not necessarily in a good financial position, but they don't want to turn this animal out. And so then funders, these people all post these profiles. They can load up a picture of their animal, themselves with their animals, whatever they choose, and they tell their story. And then funders can browse all of these profiles, and they can select an animal to help and fund their fix. And they have two options. They can either register on the site, and they'll select an user ID that they pick, and that is all that the owner is going to see of them. That's the only information the owner will have.
Okay.
And they can email the owners through our system on the site and say, hey, I would like to help you. I see you're in XYZ area. I know there's a clinic kind of near there. I'll call them, give them my credit card and your name and the pet's name, and you just go there. So they can do it that way. They can just coordinate, find a clinic together, and keep us out of the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And to our excitement, so many people are doing that, and they're really enjoying connecting.
Okay.
But if they're really busy or for some reason they don't want to get involved in that process, they can make a donation to us and say, this is the animal I'd like to help, and then we will coordinate it for them.
Okay, well, this sounds really cool, and in my mind, and maybe the minds of listeners, it probably raises a few other questions, including, so I know you mentioned that funders are just kind of, good people trying to make a nice impact. I mean, but as you've done this for a while, and now I guess there's quite a number of folks who've done this through Get Your Fix, I mean, who are these people more specifically? I mean, obviously kind of many of them at least are do-gooders, but are they people just looking to sort of help in a very specific way as opposed to, say, donating to their local charity or radio station or whatever it might be? Do they just have a specific aim to help someone get their pet spayed or neutered?
Yeah, we see a couple different types of people, I'd say, or groups that are coming on. One, exactly that. They're people... a really good audience for Fix It and Get Your Fix in general has been donors that have been supporting the shelter systems and spay-neuter clinics for the last 15 years. Like myself, I've, been involved, but not necessarily seeing change in the number of animals that are coming in. So they're excited about new innovative things to, to support. Because here we are really getting to the people who really need the help,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, the people who are utilizing the low-cost spay-neuter clinics that don't necessarily need it. Because the system does kind of weed out, people who have money don't really want to go on the net, tell their story, tell a fake story, put up a picture of their animal and where they live and tell the world that they're poor if they're not. So I think people like knowing they're helping the people who really need help. We also have people who have themselves, they'll say they've been in this situation before. There was a point where they were in hard financial times and had an animal situation, and they're happy to help others. So
yeah.
That's a cool story. And then the other thing we've seen is kind of taking on a life of its own in that spay-neuter clinics and vets and shelters and people are starting to register as funders and then emailing the people and saying, don't worry about finding someone to fund it for you. You come to us. We'll do it for free.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah,
so it already has kind of taken on its own little life in that way.
Yep. Yep.
So and what because you're obviously a marketing person from way back, you probably do know this. Well, I'd be curious if it's already clear what percentage so far are one-time funders versus sort of repeat funders, if you will.
I would say, we have some people who come on right away and like fund 10 fixes.
Or, mm-hmm.
They email a bunch of people.
Sure.
I would say most everybody's being repeat from what I'm seeing. People are really, it's a little bit addictive,
yeah.
especially if they contact the owners directly because these people are so appreciative. appreciative.
Yeah.
You know, people ask me, well, how are you going to keep people from taking advantage of them? But it's the complete opposite. And, you know, they're so appreciative. I did one kind of incognito. I kind of wanted to go through the process myself as a person and not as fix it and just see how it worked right at the beginning.
Sure.
And this girl, you know, she emailed me the night before to let me know that she wasn't, you know, giving Rocky any food. She was following all her instructions. She emailed me the next day to say, I dropped him off. I hope he's going to be okay. And then when he got home, she did a video of him and sent it to me. I mean, so appreciative. And this was a girl. She was 18, living at home, but her great aunt had died and had a puppy that they were going to drop at the shelter because nobody wanted it. And she begged her mom to let her keep him. And so, but she wanted to get him fixed. So, you know, we're really finding it's a bit addictive. So we see people doing a lot of repeats.
Sure. And the thing is, as you've already kind of indicated, there really are kind of a variety of different stories that people have who you know are looking for some help. I mean, I'm just going to have a few here, but I'm just going to pick out one or two.
Great.
Just they're different geographically, and won't read their whole profile or my story thing. But this is regarding a dog, Bruno, who lives in Whittier, California. And the guy that wrote this is Dean, and he says, I have a full-time job, but don't make much, and I'm just barely getting by, and I believe getting Bruno fixed is the right thing to do, but just can't afford it. He goes on to sort of tout the importance and the virtues, but just feel strapped. But one thing I thought was cool, just as yet another sort of way that people, I think, show their appreciation or can, later in his story, he says, I am an artist and illustrator who specializes in portraiture and would like to offer my graphic services in exchange. And then he gives it actually his website. So even that's like, you know, kind
oh,
of
cool.
more what you're saying is like, not only are people not taking advantage, but they're really appreciative and again, they're maybe just strapped for cash, but want to find different ways to say thank you. So I just thought that was really, really cool. And then in a whole different part of the country, this report of this is for a cat. That was a Bruno the dog. This is Daphne the cat, and Daphne's mom says we welcomed this medium-haired calico into our home from a local cat rescue group. She is just over a year old, and within 3 days of welcoming her home, she went into heat. I've contacted my regular vet as well as a couple of others, and I'm being told that it will cost me $195 plus for just the spay due to recent hardships from my family. Husband lost a job or something, and you know, et cetera, about they just don't have the money. So anyways, goes on to say other things that, you know, they would do and how important the cat has become to the household. So, you know, I'd like to think if it hasn't happened already that, you know, Daphne and Daphne's mom will hear from some, generous funder. And, but again, like you say, it doesn't seem like anybody, and just the sampling I've taken is, you know, doing anything kind of weird or just trying to like, you know, cause again, the other thing that you've established is that even if somebody were a little bit on the phony side, they wouldn't end up with the money ever. That only the procedure would be paid for, whichever option they selected.
Well, so, you know, we recently had somebody who posted a profile that said, you know, I bought a purebred Pomeranian. She costs so much, I can't afford to get her fixed. And we were like, delete.
Right. Yeah.
That's this is not the platform for that.
Yeah, you're talking to the wrong people right now.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
But, and, you know, we also have to think as people, like I want to end pet overpopulation, but I can't take them all into my home, right?
You know,
so we can't. So now there's armies of people out there who have good hearts. They're good Samaritans. They want to do a good thing. And they just have, you know, they've taken this animal. They just need a little help. And what we're also finding, which you made me think of when you read that last profile there, is in addition to the clinics coming on and emailing people and saying, come to us, we'll do it for free or we'll do it very cheap, is there's also people in the animal welfare community that know about the clinics and different things that are searching for people in their local area, or they'll see something like that where it says $190. Or we have some people who say, I called my vet and they said it's $350. I don't know what to do. You know, we as people in the movement think, of course everybody knows about low-cost spay-neuter, but they don't. You know, they're not necessarily running in circles or catching those types of messages. So people will email people and say, hey, did you know that you can go here and get it done for $25 or $50 or something?
Yeah.
And then the people email back and say, I had no idea. I'll just call them. Thank you so much. And, you know, so it's also just connecting to people for knowledge. It's breaking out lots of barriers, which I'm real excited about.
That's so great. Well, we've got callers, we've got emailers, and also I want to sort of, I think I've already missed the obvious point at which to do this, but mention the website, which is getyourfix.org, and that's where you could go either as someone who needs help getting your animal spayed or neutered, or if you would like to be a funder, and then you'll just sort of select whichever profile fits you best, and the other overall website for the foundation that has launched this program is fixit-foundation.org. And our guest again today is Stephanie Downs, co-founder and president of the Fix It Foundation. And again, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so one of our phone callers got tired of waiting, but I'm going to read this email in the meantime. It says, she is so right about spay and neuter being a marketing problem. Great work. The website is terrific. Is this available in every state? And that's from an emailer named Victor.
Yes, it is definitely available in every state. And, we actually are in, we get a lot of requests from Canada. And then just last week at a conference I was at, people from Puerto Rico have asked me if we could add Puerto Rico as a state and they'd help us translate the site into Spanish. So, and we even, at some point we want to open this up to be global. So at this point it's just a matter of funding. So, cause we have a fabulous development firm that we use and they charge us just bare minimums. But, so it is statewide right now, but we hope to go bigger.
Right. And in fact, as a sample, I sort of did this with you, and we just sort of looked at where, you know, I live on the other side of the state from where we're talking, Tampa, but I live on the other coast. And so we looked at, we just sort of put mine in as though I would be doing a profile, and then, yeah, just popped up, you know, a dozen or 15 probably things that were nearby. So if, and probably more to the point, when I decide to become a funder, then I can just choose, you know, which of those folks, and hopefully more than one, will get some help with their spay and neuter. So it's really cool, and it's really, again, obviously there's an amazing database at work already, and it sounds like just rapidly expanding with locations and where this serves expanding rapidly too.
Yeah.
So in some ways, I mean, Stephanie, you know, this seems like kind of a public service sort of animal welfare counterpart to online dating in a sense, because you're sort of matching people who need the spay and neuter with the funders, and certainly some of the same principles apply. So online dating is not without its share of mismatches, if not outright horror stories. So, I mean, has anything gone, you know, similarly sideways thus far in the evolution of Get Your Fix?
Nothing has yet. You know,
okay.
We've tried to think through all the ways, you know. You know, one, it has a natural filtering system where we feel people who don't really need the help aren't posting profiles.
Yeah.
Also, the money, and this is very important, I think, for the audience to understand, the money does not go to the owner.
Right.
The money goes to the clinic. So we're very clear with the funders about do not give the money, you know, do not pay the owner. You know, call the clinic and pay them or pay us, and then we'll pay the clinic. And then also, you know, again, unless the owners want to give up more of their information, and the funders, for that matter, they just use a username, too.
Yeah.
They tell their pet's real name. But, you know, we say unless you want to give up more information, you don't really need to from a process standpoint. So, you know, just use the email system. And but no, so far, it's other than, hey, I can't seem to upload my picture or something. Those are the technical challenges we've had to help coach people through some things. But that's about it. Now,
that's great.
Did bring up at a presentation last week, you know, what about the people who are really so bad off that they can't get to a computer at the library or at school or anywhere? And, you know, that's something we haven't yet got down that road. We've had over 100 people join our street team. So if there's anybody out there that would like to join our street team, that means that you will help in your area distribute posters and brochures and table, and then you would maybe even go out into needy communities and find out about animals and post profiles for them, and help, you know, recruit people to help these animals in your own community. But other than that, we haven't quite tackled that. Well, haven't tackled that problem, but
sure.
Down the road maybe. Somebody asked me if we had iPads for all of our street team. I was like, no, not yet.
Yeah, it's not quite that operation, that kind of operation. But on a kind of related note, I mean, again, as people get familiar with the site, they'll find too that you know, again, based on geography, there are low cost spay neuter clinics listed. Now, how are those listed, or can someone, for example, I noticed when I was kind of just zooming around that in Florida there were, I think there was one, but certainly not some that I know you know, fit that description, including one I mentioned earlier in the show, the Animal Coalition of Tampa, which is a low-cost spay neuter right here. So are the clinics kind of, is it kind of up to them to add themselves, or how would that information get added so that people who do need that or even funders have a broader array of choices maybe or things to recommend?
Sure. Well, at the very beginning, prior to launching the site, we had a volunteer work on finding state databases or different databases out there that we could give people to search. So Spay USA is an organization that has a lot of state databases, and then also PetSmart and ASPCA recently put together a nationwide database. So we provide links to each of the state databases and also that nationwide database, but it is something that we've been in discussion about for a while, because what we find is, you know, one day I sent a link to a database and said, hey, go here, you should be able to find something. And there was 15 different locations near her. And she reached out to me after she'd called like 12 of them. And she was like, well, two are closed, three only do ferals, four only do pit bulls, two won't service me because I'm not in their county. And again, this makes me crazy. I'm like, why do we make this so hard? So
yeah. It
is something we've discussed. We would like to maybe at some point develop a more comprehensive database where people can search by what the type of animals they do, the prices that they have, and so on. So that's going to be amassing a bit of a volunteer committee to work on that.
Sure. And so I'm guessing someone like you, you know, with again your business background, probably has a 5-year plan or something that lays out details for expansion. I mean, you alluded to some of the international expansion that's hopefully not too far down the road. And so, how many users and funders would you like to see, or are there other sort of milestones that you already kind of have in your head, if not on paper somewhere?
Sure. Of course, it's down in a business plan, my friend.
Yeah.
That's my idea of fun on a Friday night.
There you go. You're crazy that way, Stephanie. Yeah.
So a couple of things. One, we would like to expand globally, and we think that would be great. We'd like to build the database. We're already growing actually faster than we thought we would. To give everybody some numbers, we've had the site up for exactly 4 months, and we already have 1,000 people registered. We've barely done any marketing. We have 1,200 people registered. I forgot to check the stats again this morning. We're adding about 20 every day. And we have about 800 pet profiles, about 150 funders, which, again, you don't necessarily need a one-to-one ratio because they're, helping multiple people, but we certainly need more funders. And so if we keep at the rate that we're going, we'll have about 5,000 people registered by the end of the year, because the amount of people registering per day is rapidly increasing.
Sure.
Our hope is to become, our long-term vision is to become the go-to place for people who want to get their animal fixed. And to tell you a little bit of background on that, that was our original idea. Originally we wanted to do our case study down in that we're doing in the islands, and then having built ourselves up into a bigger organization and be able to launch Get Your Fix, which pretty much was, if you're anywhere in the country and you want to get your animal fixed, you contact us, tell us your story, and we'll pay for it. We'll call the clinic, we'll pay for it. But being a new organization, and already we were getting emails into our sites with people telling us these heartbreaking stories and they needed help, and I just thought to myself, we can't help all these people yet, so how can we come up with a creative idea to work this out? And that was where the matching idea came from. So I would love to see someday where we're the go-to. Maybe we have clinics are kind of, verify, they're fix-it clinics as far as, just they accept our vouchers, that type of thing.
Oh, right.
Maybe we have like a nationwide voucher, and there's 5,000 clinics across the country that will take that flat fee voucher. We have some of those long-term visions and kind of see how it grows. But it's already taking on more life than we thought, so I think some of those dreams are very realistic.
Well, and with that kind of rapid expansion, I guess one thing I'm curious about is, so let's say one of these folks that I read or that you described, got help and Daphne, got fixed or Bruno got fixed. Is their person or their owner, quote unquote, just as eligible, let's say that, for one reason or another, they end up with another animal. I mean, is there anything where, like, hey, you kind of got a turn, maybe the next person should sort of be up for the next funder? Or is it everybody still kind of, if they happen to have more than one animal, then they would still be on and available for funding without any acknowledgement that they were funded, 2 weeks earlier or a month and a half earlier?
Well, a couple things there. So when the owner's registers, they see a different back end than what the funders see. What the owners see is the ability to load up pet profiles and tell the story and stuff. And they can post multiple pets, which has worked out really well, not only for some families that have taken in, you know, a box of kittens or something, but also for people who are trying to control feral communities,
mm-hmm.
That we're finding they're using it as a way to help get these animals fixed that they're trapping and trying to get fixed. So, and then a date is applied so people can see what date the animal was posted, you know, the profile was posted. So they can search. We do have people who have come to us and said, hey, I want to make a donation. Pick the ones that have been up there the longest.
I want to help those.
We recently got a couple $1,000 grant, so we're going out and now applying, you know, with a donation, I should say, from somebody to do a little bit more development, because we want to have a lot more features and functions we want to add, but we are putting mechanisms in place where, like, after a 90-day period, the owners will receive a notice that their profile is going to go inactive unless they reactivate it. Because what we do find, too, is people do maybe get help, or they maybe find a low-cost clinic or something happens, and they don't go take the profile down.
Right.
So we're doing various things to try and continue to streamline. But to answer your question, the only way that people could know that maybe they're helping a different one would be to look at the dates, you know, as far as if they want to help somebody who hasn't recently had a fix. But
right.
We have thought about ideas where, especially funders, where they could have the ability to maybe have a Facebook application where they can showcase all the animals they've helped. But
oh, cool.
What the point you made is very good. We'll think about that some more. We hadn't completely thought that point through, but right now it's just more date and searching in your area.
Great. Well, Stephanie, we're sort of nearing the end of our time, so I don't know if we should even try to touch briefly on the whole St. Croix study, or I know it's a little bit complicated, but I don't know if there's like just a sort of a simple short version that you even want to try to outline. Or
absolutely, I can give a simple short version, and then if your listeners want to know more, I'd be happy to come back on the show again, or they're of course welcome to contact us. So in addition to Get Your Fix, we're also doing a project on the island of St. Croix, which is in the U.S. Virgin Islands on U.S. territory, where they have extreme pet overpopulation, almost three times that of the U.S. And we picked this island because it is very representative of some of the communities in the United States, low income, low education levels, where they have extreme overpopulation. And we wanted a place where we could do a testing out different marketing messages and incentives in a kind of controlled environment. There's only 53,000 people on the island, one newspaper, you know, I think two TV stations, a couple radio stations. So we can kind of know that we hit everybody, and we're rolling through. It's going to be about a two-year project. We're already a year into it, testing out different marketing messages and incentives and doing focus groups and things to find that tipping point for the people that are the most resistant. So if you were to go to our site, fixit-foundation.org/video, you can see a 15-minute video that talks about the project.
Well, that's great. And again, you know, one of the things, too, that as you do expand internationally, that obviously you'll be contending with, and this will probably be part of what the St. Croix study yields, is just sort of the cultural elements that, you know, in certain areas, you know, have strong influence on how people think about the whole idea of spay-neuter and how to sort of navigate around those in some cases.
And that's huge. And that's what we're doing. Even though it's for St. Croix, what we're doing, though, is developing a methodology where you survey your community up front, and then you use that to develop messages, and then you test and track. And so then that way we can go to rural Alabama or Minnesota or Illinois or any other places that has a population where they're having a challenge with, and we can implement the methodology. Their messages will probably be completely different because as they go through that methodology.
Right. Well, this all sounds great. So, Stephanie, thank you so much. Again, it's Stephanie Downs from the Fix It Foundation. It's fixit-foundation.org. And again, more specifically for the program we chiefly discussed today, Get Your Fix. That's simply getyourfix.org. Stephanie, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals, and thanks for all your good work.
Oh, thank you, Duncan. It was wonderful to be here.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a gift card from Loving Hut, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, a song from an album by a band that have all drummed up quite a bit of attention recently. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Stars are falling from the sky. It's no secret that our world is in darkness tonight.
If anyone can name that animal tune, call 813-239-9663. We might do it off the air. Who knows? We might do it on the air. We're easy. All right, so want to get into a little more animal news, including this sort of odd, but, well, whatever. Dateline Cleveland, an exotic animal owner who made headlines last summer when one of his bears mauled a woman to death has died after apparently choking on a sex toy, authorities said. Sam Mazzola was found dead in his Columbia station home on Sunday, face down on a waterbed, etc., etc., and partly, I guess, why this is still worth noting or reporting is this guy is sort of an infamous figure, or was. He'd been in the news in the past because of his ownership and exhibitions of wild animals, which he kept on his property, and, you know, would have bear wrestling things and exhibits. And I think a year ago, one of his black bears fatally mauled a guy working there. And anyway, so, well, that's the only comment I have there, I guess. Also, something else that just got passed along to me right before showtime by, again, Sean Kinnan, our Assistant News and Public Affairs Director. This was from the AP. Dateline Helsinki. The United States is set to announce possible trade and diplomatic sanctions against Iceland for ramping up its whale hunts despite an international moratorium on commercial whaling. U.S. officials told the Associated Press that the Obama administration on Wednesday will cite Iceland under a domestic law that allows the president to act against foreign nationals or countries who flout international animal conservation rules. After the announcement, the president has 60 days to decide on sanctions. Officials say the U.S. is particularly concerned about Iceland's escalated hunt for endangered fin whales and its recent resumption of exports of whale meat to other pro-whaling nations. They spoke on condition of anonymity because the move had not been formally announced. This one comes from the LA Times, one of their blogs there. Animal control officers will have the right during administrative hearings to decide whether a dog is dangerous or vicious, Los Angeles County supervisors decided Tuesday. Under current law, only a judge can declare a dog dangerous. The Department of Animal Care and Control says the changes to the county code will save legal costs and make it easier to protect the public from dogs that have potential to attack people. A vicious dog, quote-unquote, is one that has been trained to fight or that severely injures or kills a person without provocation. Once the dog is found to be potentially dangerous or vicious, animal control can require the animal be confined, locked up, muzzled, or dressed in a fluorescent yellow collar visible from 50 feet away. The owner can be fined and ordered to take the animal to obedience classes. In rare cases, the dog can be euthanized. And in a story that I know will crackle in different directions across people's homes and cars listening to this, from Reuters, NFL quarterback Michael Vick watched the violent cockfight, a variation of the illegal animal fighting that led to his arrest, jail time, and fall from football fame, with his hands folded in his lap. Vick, two U.S. representatives and National Humane Society President and CEO Wayne Pacelli grimly viewed the footage of a child watching two cocks tear at each other in a House Judiciary Committee room on Tuesday. The Philadelphia Eagles player was there to endorse an anti-animal fighting bill inspired in part by his own high-profile conviction in 2007 for running a kennel of fighting dogs. Quote, in prison, I told myself I want to be part of the solution, not the problem, Vic said. These laws are not to punish people, but prevent people from getting involved. The Animal Fighting Spectator Prohibition Act of 2011 would strengthen penalties for those who finance animal fighting and close gaps in the law to cover those who attend or bring children to illegal cockfights and dogfights. All right. I think that concludes today's edition of Animal News. I think we have time to hear an extra animal song. This is a vaguely time-warpish animal tune from Patrick and Eugene, called The Birds and the Bees on Talking Animals.
The birds and the bees are flying in the trees. The sun's in the sky, just for you and I.
bees all flying in the trees. With sun in the sky, just for you and I. The sky's perfect blue, no cloud could swallow you. It's a sign from above that shows that we're in love.
That was Patrick and Eugene with the song called The Birds and the Bees, which puts us pretty close now to the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, July 27th at 11 a.m. for another edition. We did have a winner on Name That Animal Tune by way of email. David DeMaris call. It was The Fly from U2, prominent in the set, as a lot of those Octune Baby tunes are. And this last bit of the tour with the big claw, U2's big stadium setup there. Anyways, congratulations to him. And anyways, we'll be back next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives, podcasts of past Talking Animals shows. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the fabulous Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing next, noon to 3. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one from Echo and the Bunnymen. Indeed, this is Bedbugs and Ballyhoo by Echo and the Bunnymen, taking us right up to the NPR News. And then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. We'll see you back here next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on WMNF for Talking Animals. Chipmunk, kangaroo, valley.
ballyhoo. Let's wait to be bumbles. Let's wait to be bumbles. Let's wait to be bumbles. Let's wait to be bumbles.
Echo and the Bunnymen, Bedbugs and Ballyhoo. Stay tuned for Scott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, coming up momentarily right after the NPR News, which is coming up presently. It's WMNF Tampa. We'll see you Wednesday at 11 a.m. talking animals.
From NPR News in Washington.